Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from April 2015. Ms. Ashley Gill, Integrity Specialist of Textile Exchange, presents Standards Sustainability Tool.
Hello, can everybody hear me okay? Yes? Thank you all so much for coming. As the slide says, I'll be presenting on standards as a sustainability tool, and I'll talk about what standards are and how they can be used as a tool for sustainability, and then we'll look specifically at the project that we're working on in responsible wool. And if you were here earlier, Pamela's presentation kind of teed up what I'm going to talk about really well. My name is Ashley Gill, and I'm Integrity Specialist at Textile Exchange. I am from the U.S., as you can probably tell. Just a few slides about Textile Exchange. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar. Our mission statement is to inspire and equip people to accelerate sustainable practices in the textile industry. And we do that in a number of ways, but before we move on to that, I really want to emphasize the people part. That's really where we think we can hit the sweet spot, is contacting people within companies and getting them to kind of understand more about what sustainability practices in the textile industry look like, and for them to be able to bridge connections and network with one another in order to accelerate those practices across the industry. So the three main areas that Textile Exchange works in are membership, farm, and integrity. So if you look at this slide, this represents just a slice of some of the members of Textile Exchange. And as you can see, we've got companies from Europe, North America, all over the world, brands, supply chain, and also some producers. And I mentioned before that we focus on the idea of people, and we want to bring together people in companies, and we do that in a number of different ways through conferences, presenting at events like this. We host seminars. We also provide a lot of information online, so we'll collect information and then distribute it out to our members as well. On the farm side, Textile Exchange historically started as organic exchange, and our primary focus at that time was to build the market for organic cotton, both supply and demand. And so we are still working really strongly in this area, and that's what the farm part of Textile Exchange is still working on. So you can see there's a number of companies here that are just focused on organic cotton. We also have over 200 farm producer groups that are members as well. And the third part of Textile Exchange is where I'll spend most of my time today, and that's talking about standards. So we historically, like I said, we started out looking at organic cotton, and we realized that in that space of companies wanting to use organic cotton, that there's a big question mark maybe around how a fiber leaves the farm and then how it gets to the brand. There's a number of steps in between, and there wasn't really a strong way to provide that verification. And so we developed the organic, at the time it was the OE100 and OE blended, and they were ways to track organic raw material through the supply chain so that a brand could make a claim like 75% organic cotton or 80%, 100%. There's also another standard, GOTS, that's working in that same space as well. They are a higher standard than the OE, which is now the organic content standard. They have additional social, environmental, and chemical processing requirements. Ours is just the chain of custody, just to identify the raw material. So I will talk about these standards a little bit more in detail, but this is kind of where this is where my background is. I work in the standards primarily, and the project that we're working on is not on this board yet because it's not final. The responsible wool standard isn't finished, but I'll get back to that in just a little bit. So this is mostly what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about how a standard can be used to address issues in sustainability and why standards are uniquely positioned to fulfill that role in an effective way. And then I want to kind of change back and look look at the wool supply chain and look at some of the issues that exist and how standards can be used to address those problems specifically, and how the responsible wool standard is aiming to do that. So what is a standard? I'm going to talk about integrity and verification, what chain of custody looks like, and then how the standards can be used as a tool. So the big question for companies that are looking to integrate sustainability in their production is, how do you know? If you want to set a target of using a certain amount of a particular material, you want to make sure that there were no animals harmed, that your workers were safe, how do you know? Because a lot of this information is based just on maybe the word of your supplier, maybe on the word of your fabric supplier. It's really difficult to know unless you dig a little bit deeper. You have to know the truth to be able to tell the truth. And that's really where integrity and verification sit. So integrity in this aspect is making sure that the practices of your business align with the principles of your business. And this is done primarily through verification. And there are a number of different ways to do verification. I'm going to go through a few kind of boring slides really fast, but afterwards you'll have access to this presentation. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time here just because the terminology might get, some of you may already be familiar with this. But a standard we're defining is just any kind of norm that sets out conditions, either for farming or production methods. So it's some kind of defined practice in sustainability, or in specifically in social responsibility, environmental, animal welfare, organic, anything like that. A certification body is an independent third party that goes out and checks against that standard. So they'll go to a supplier, they'll go to a farm, and make sure that the requirements that are listed out in the standard are being met. And a certificate is issued at the end of that process, and that's what says this company or this product meets the requirements of this standard. There's different ways to do verification. If you're trying to test for chemical content in a final product, you can do testing, negative testing, to make sure that that restricted substances are not there. You can do use positive testing for material identification. One example of that is Unify. They have a technology, Reprieve, which is recycled polyester, and they embed a tracer in that material in the extrusion process, so that at the end they can test a final product and say, yeah, that's definitely Reprieve. Another option for verification is just self-declaration for a supplier or a fabric company to just sign a piece of paper and says, yes, this is what I say it is, and I'm taking responsibility for that. Another step, a step above that in terms of maybe outside credibility, is second party verification, where for a brand, maybe they go in themselves and they're checking the supplier to make sure that they're meeting certain criteria. But when we use the word standard and certification, we're almost always referring to third-party certification. And this is when an independent certification body goes in and does the check for the standard to make sure that the requirements are met. And the certification is just that whole process of a company applying for certification to a specific standard, the certification body coming in and doing the check, and then the certificate being issued in the end. So these are just a few third-party standards. Some of these are specifically for textiles, and some of them apply to other industries as well, just to kind of give you maybe some brand recognition behind what I mean when I say a standard. Some of those are ours, and some of them are not. So these are our standards, and to give you kind of an idea of the criteria behind all of them, this chart shows all of our standards touch in one of these four areas. So input verification is identifying that initial raw material to make sure that it meets whatever claim is being used. So I'm going to give the example of the OCS. The input verification here are organic farming standards. So like the National Organic Program or the EC834 in Europe, we take that standard and then apply our chain of custody to track that material through the supply chain. For the OCS, like I mentioned before, there's no additional processing requirements. And then it allows you to make a content claim about what that product contains. In comparison, the Global Recycled Standard, it has initial input verification to make sure that the raw material meets the definition of recycled. And then it uses the chain of custody to track that material through the supply chain. But then there are additional social, environmental, and chemical requirements that allow you to make a claim about the entire product. So you're not just claiming that this t-shirt contains recycled polyester, but you're also making a claim about how the product itself was produced. And this, again, this example plays out really well with GOTS, because our standard just allows you to make a claim like made with 75% organically grown cotton. Whereas because GOTS has additional social, environmental, and chemical requirements, you can make a claim that says this entire product is organic because of the way that it was produced. So this is our background. I also want to touch on the Responsible Down Standard is the most recent one that Textile Exchange has developed. We partnered with the North Face and with Control Union. The North Face wanted to address their down supply chain, and so we partnered with them to create this standard. Hopefully a lot of you in the intersection of outdoor and performance maybe are familiar with the standard. It's taken off quite quickly. I think right now we have about 30 brands that have committed to using the Responsible Down Standard. And that addresses animal welfare for the ducks and geese that are involved in the production. So this is the part that I want to make sure is really clear, because all of our standards, this is kind of the glue that binds them all together. Whenever we revise the OE100 and OE blended into the organic content standard, we also broke out the chain of custody part of the standard, because we realized that same mechanism that is used to track organic material or recycled material or ethical down could be used for any kind of material. And so we broke it out and created the content claim standard, and all of our standards use that same chain of custody mechanism to provide the traceability for the materials. So I'll spend just a little bit of time talking about how that actually works. So the concept is that you're taking this, whatever the input material is, whether it's a particular kind of cotton or recycled or responsible wool, whatever it is, it makes sure that it ends up in the final product. And it's done through a system of scope certificates and transaction certificates. So what happens is each step in the supply chain is required to be certified by the certification body, and they go in and check. They look at all of the input for the company, and they look at their internal tracking methods to make sure that they have a way to connect their input and their output together, and then it looks at all of the output. And if they meet that criteria, then they're issued a scope certificate. But a scope certificate it just tells you that the facility is able to meet the requirements of the standard. It doesn't necessarily say this garment meets the requirements of the standard. And so for that, we use transaction certificates. So every time goods are shipped in between one production stage to the next, the certification body looks at the stock that's on hand, and they decide whether or not they have enough stock on hand to have produced that material. So if they have 100 pounds of incoming certified organic cotton, but they're claiming to produce 150, then the CB will catch that, and they won't issue the transaction certificate. And so that is the verification to the buyer that whatever is in this shipment is actually true. It really does meet the qualifications of the standard. And this is the system that all of our standards use. So I want to go back then to the point of how standards can be used as a tool for sustainability. And I think if you were here for Pamela's presentation, she set it up really well, looking at you need to identify what your baseline is, where you are, and then to set a target and figure out a way to get to that target. And I think standards, in themselves incorporate that really well. And it's kind of it's an option that's available to everyone to identify a target for you to try to meet. And there are standards in all different aspects of sustainability, and the question is more about finding which one works for you. And so if you look at where you are and the requirements of a standard as kind of where you want to be, then you can more easily track your progression towards sustainability in that particular regard, whatever the topic is that that standard covers. So, some of the benefits of using a standard for this, it's one option is for every company to identify that on their own and to define their own targets and set all of that up on their own. But the problem with that is that if you have overlapping suppliers, then maybe you have suppliers that are giving requests for five different types of criteria, and they have to report their information one way for this company, and they have to report it one way for this company, and you kind of can create a little bit of overlap or confusion. But if you're using industry-wide standards like this, then that kind of creates a common language, some common goals for the industry to work towards. It's also a good way to ensure that the investment that you're making, whether it's in a preferred material, in a preferred technology, that you can make sure that it's having the impact that you want it to have. So I'm going to shift then away a little bit from looking at standards to looking at wool and the questions that we were trying to answer when we initiated the Responsible Wool Project. So I'll look at production and some of the challenges, and then market surveys, which I don't have a ton of information on that. A lot of this you may already know. It might be in some of the other presentations that are looking at wool. This is where most of the world's wool comes from. As you can see, Australia and China and the United States are in the top three. So one of the issues that this brings up is just regional variability. There's practices that happen in Australia that don't happen in China and the US. Just overall, animal husbandry techniques vary from one region to another, and that can bring up some challenges. This is sort of what a typical wool supply chain looks like. It's very simplified. I left the spinner and the mill and assembler in gray because that's kind of what we're used to those. This is unique. What's in blue is unique to the wool supply chain. This information is not representative at all of the entire industry. This is the group of people that we engaged with to start the Responsible Wool Standard. This was their information that they reported. So a lot of the people that are in our stakeholder group are working in next to skin or in sweaters. So this is just representative of the people that are engaged with our project. So what is the problem? Why did we start the Responsible Wool Standard project? If you look at those other standards that Textile Exchange has, a lot of them were developed because we saw a gap in the existing standards that were available to companies trying to address particular issues. This is probably one of the most popular when it comes to things that are directed towards consumers, these are the kinds of ads. This is the kind of information that NGOs, activist NGOs, are putting out there. And there's a number of problems with this as it's presented. This is coming from PETA. In terms of accuracy for the information, I think most people would look at this and they would assume that, oh, maybe they have to kill a sheep in order to get the wool. And that is just flat not true. But this kind of information is what potentially your consumers are being exposed to. These are the questions that, whether or not there's any legitimacy in the presentation of the facts this way, these are still the questions that you have to answer. And so this is one of the issues. There's another issue with land use. There's been talk that the sheep industry, specifically in Argentina, have contributed to the devastation of grasslands as they naturally exist. There's also, and some of these are less and less, I think, known by consumers, There's another issue in how the wool is cleaned and how it's processed. It uses, the industry practice right now uses a lot of bleach. So these were kind of some of the issues that we wanted to address. So just looking specifically where these issues kind of come up, the chemical uses in the mill and in the scouring phase, which I didn't add that to the slide, sorry. Pamela brought this point up also. It's really difficult to trace behind the scour because they use such big lots. And so they're pulling in bales of sheared wool from different farms that have been brought together by a broker or a trader just because they're the same quality, not necessarily that they're from the same location. It might be that a scour only works in material from a specific country, but they could be bringing in material from different countries also. So it's hard to tell what the information is behind the scour. And so, but those issues of animal welfare and land use, if you don't know where the wool is coming from, which we, as we've already illustrated, it's hard to get to that information, then you can't really do anything. You can't really address those issues unless you're able to have traceability back to where it is. Because even if we can say sheep don't have to die to give their wool, we know, you know, shearing is a normal, fine practice. But it's the case that there are some shearers who are more violent than others. And how do you know that's not happening in your supply chain if you can't go back to behind the scour or to where the country that it's coming from? So mulesing is one issue, but there's a whole range of animal husbandry practices that may potentially need to be addressed in your supply chain. So this is kind of where, again, this information is coming from the group of companies that we engaged for the Responsible Wool Standard. And these are the top two issues, and also the environmental impacts. That one says, there's in parentheses that say specifically in the supply chain. So there's land management, environmental impacts, animal welfare, and traceability. All these issues kind of came up as we were initiating the project. So I'm going to look specifically, give you just some additional information about where we are and how you can be involved if this is something that you are interested in. In 2013, there was increasingly a lot of attention given to this, the topic of animal welfare. And at the end of 2013, H&M, who is one of our members, we've worked really closely with them in organic cotton and in other projects as well, they came to us to ask for us to initiate a project to address responsible wool or to address animal welfare in wool production. And I think it's important to mention that what they could have done, what H&M could have done is just said, we want to figure it out in our supply chain and we want you to help us figure it out in our supply chain. And so we could have, you know, gotten a certification body and gone in and done audits for their particular supply chain, and they would have had a solution pretty fast that way, but it would have only worked for them. And they have a lot of volume, but obviously they're not the whole industry. But what they really wanted to do was to create a tool that the entire industry could use. And so that's the reason that they came to us and said, this is what we want the project to look like. We want it to be an open, multi-stakeholder approach. And so we created an international working group, and I'll talk a little bit more about what that looks like in just a minute. This is kind of a general idea of where we are. The completion of the standard, we're not exactly sure. We're hoping that it will be in 2016, in early 2016, if possible. But because of the approach that we're taking through the International Working Group, it's possible that deadline might change. Talking about how the International Working Group is structured, ICEAL is an organization, it's an alliance of sustainability standards, and they bring together best practice in developing standards to address sustainability. So they don't do audits, they don't issue certificates, they are really just an information sharing platform for standards owners that are working in sustainability. And this is where we got a lot of the structure of our working group, how to ensure that participation is happening across different industries, how to make sure that we're representing regions well, that we're representing differences in different parts of the supply chain, different income, all of those things. And this is how the group itself is structured. So we have the actual international working group, and then we have these additional groups that just, this group is mostly people that say, hey, I really want to know, I'm not interested in actually being a part of the group, but I want to know what is going on. I want to be kept up to date. And this is that group. Within the working group, we have a steering committee, and they define the direction of the standard. They identify the goal of the standard, the objectives, the scope. All of that is decided by the steering committee. The technical group are really just kind of the workers. We're the ones that put together the documents, that draft things, that prepare for the calls, that organize the calls. All those kinds of things are done by the technical group. The advisory group, they don't vote necessarily on the standard, but they provide their expertise. So if you look, this is what the International Working Group looks like right now. Up here, this top branch, those are the steering committee. There are a lot of brands, but we also have Ovis 21 is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. They're working on a land management project in Argentina. RESP is the Responsible Eco-Sourcing Platform that's addressing a number of different materials, and then Humane Society International is an animal welfare group. This is the technical group. H&M, Continuum Textiles, this is a wool farmer from Australia. Control Union is the certification body, and then myself and Ann Gillespie with Textile Exchange. On the advisory group, we have some additional brands and supply chain members that are participating in the group. This group has grown, it's probably twice that size now. It's grown really, really fast, especially in the last 2 or 3 months. We've seen a huge increase in the number of companies that are interested in the project. So all of this, I'm going to talk a little bit about the goal of the standard and the defined scope that we have. And there are two things that are important to mention here. One is that all of this is subject to change. These are all drafts that are available online. Part of the ICL's best practices is for the whole process to be open. So all of our notes, the drafts of where we are for the terms of reference, they're all posted online. So you can kind of see the direction that the standard is heading. It's also true that there's a number of issues that we could have addressed, but what we're trying to do is not to create the end-all be-all standard. We really want to address where the gaps are. And the gaps, as we see them, is for a global, applicable definition for animal welfare and for a way for that to be audited. And then also land management, a way to capture land management practices that are happening across all of the different regions, and then to marry that up with a tool for chain of custody to make sure that wool that is meeting those guidelines is actually ending up in your product. So those three things are, you'll see reflected in all of the goals and objectives. The five freedoms is referring to the animal welfare, making sure that all of the animals are treated in a way that lives up to the five freedoms, that the land has been managed responsibly, and that there's a strong chain of custody system to ensure that's what's ending up in the final product. And this is just, it gets a little bit more specific with the objectives of how we intend to do that. The scope, we've decided for this version of the standard to only address sheep. So there are other wool fibers, but they're currently outside of the scope of the standard. We will address animal welfare, land management, and supply chain. These are issues that were put on the table and then taken off for the time being. After the animal leaves the farm, they would be outside of the scope of the standard as we've currently outlined things right now. So that means that potentially issues like transport wouldn't be covered. Social issues of farm workers, and then environmental or social issues in the supply chain after the farm. Those won't be addressed in this version. It's possible that future versions could take that into consideration. And I want to go back to the timeline. We're right now we're in the development of task groups. We have individual or smaller groups that are tackling specific criteria, and we're trying to map that up with whatever existing standards and guidelines exist. A lot of the existing animal welfare standards or initiatives are either regional specific or they're just guidelines. They're best practices. It's not something that can be audited against. And so that's really what these task forces are trying to do, is trying to turn all those regional pieces into one set of criteria that can be audited against in every part of the world. So how the standard would be applied. The farm is where the five freedoms and the land management issues would be applied, so they would be checked by a certification body to make sure that they meet those criteria. And then the chain of custody is all that would be checked through the supply chain. So it wouldn't necessarily, there's no animal welfare or land management issues there, so it's just chain of custody. And then when those two pieces are in place, then you can have the check on the final product that whatever wool is in that product meets the requirements of the standard. And that's really what we're trying to do. The purpose of the project is to provide brands and the supply chain with a tool to ensure animal welfare across different regions. And that's something that is not happening yet. And there will be really big challenges. The scouring stage is a big challenge in the supply chain. It's also a challenge to have animal welfare requirements that are both strict enough, but that can also be applied in different parts of the world. And so those are challenges that we're working to address. So that is the end of the presentation. And I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm available afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.eu. Copyright April 2015 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.